all about the Fed and central banking. Hi, Ted Anderson. I will give a U.S. silver dollar to everyone who purchases this book. Call 800-686-2237. It's critical to be made aware of the system. Get your copy today, 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Through the years of providing water filters to America, you've come to us and we've listened. You asked us to make the water level visible to eliminate the guesswork when refilling the water. We listened. You asked for an elevated base so the system could be used in places beside on the edge of a counter. We listened. You asked us to develop a filter that was made in the USA. We listened. You asked us to include an emergency light for camping and during power outages. We listened. After 9/11, you asked us to develop a filter that was more powerful in removing chemical agents. Again, we listened. Introducing the Berkey Light, the gravity filter requested by America, designed by Americans, and...
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Jerome Corsi, Dr. Jerome Corsi, who's a regular writer at the World... A World at Daily, and of course we carry a number of his books here, and the last one was The Late Great Planet, Late Great USA. But Jerome, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Dr. Stan, it's always a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Why don't you, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, let's see, we could pick up on any number of things. I've been writing in my Red Alert newsletter, you know, redalert.wnd.com, and we might just pick up with some of the current economic stories.
All right, fine. You go right ahead with that. I've been looking at those, and I've been very interested in them. So you go ahead and bring us up to date with the great new stimulus bill that's going to solve all of our problems. And is that why the stock market drops out of bed almost every day?
Well, I just published a new story. It just went up right this minute, and I wrote it this afternoon on WorldNet Daily. The stock market dropped 300 points today. It's at its... It's low, in the five-year low. It's within 1 point of the five-year low. And the stock market's lost 2,000 points since President Obama was elected on November 4th, which is pretty startling when you think about it. The stock market was at 96.25 on November 4th when, you know, Barack Obama was elected president-elect. And now, the day that he signs the economic stimulus package, the stock market closed at 7,552. That's a 2,000-point loss. It's actually almost 2,100-point loss since President Obama was elected. So I think that reflects a very strong distrust, vote of no confidence that the stock market is giving to the Obama administration and this entire stimulus plan.
I certainly agree with you, and of course, anybody who's actually looked at it realizes this is not a stimulus plan. It's a socialist plan. It's full of pork, and it's got a lot of crazy programs. You're going to change the delivery of health care in this country, and that's the reason they wouldn't let anybody read it beforehand. And that's why they jammed it through. They didn't complete it until 11 o'clock at night, and people are supposed to vote on it the following morning. Almost 1,100 pages. Go right ahead.
I think, Dr. Stan, no one read it. I think that when the vote was taken, I don't think there was a single senator or congressman who'd actually read the legislation. In fact, one of the reasons given why Obama said it was going to be a catastrophe if this bill weren't signed immediately, and then Obama went on the weekend vacation to Chicago with his wife so they could go out to a fancy restaurant. I guess the White House a little bit confined for President Obama. But it wasn't urgent to sign it until Tuesday. Of course, he had to have his vacation day on President's Day. And then on Tuesday, the bill is signed, and the stock market loses 300 points. So I think you can see that this huge, almost $1 trillion deficit spending plan is not being well received by investors.
And of course, when we talk about transparency, we want to have things transparent so people can see what's going on. We want to stop what was going on in the Bush administration. I don't protect the Bush administration. I think this is even going to be worse. And everything was cover up. None of the congressmen, or almost none of them, had even had a chance to see the legislation.
Well, I understand this is clearly a violation of the campaign promise, because Obama said very clearly that he was going to post all this legislation, everybody was going to be able to see it for days, and instead of that, what happens is the bill is not even able to be read by the people who voted on it. The Congress is rushed to sign it. It's going to be a catastrophe if they don't act immediately, and then Obama goes on a vacation. And I think it just shows that I'm not sure who's managing Obama or giving him his instructions, but it sure looks to me like somebody's behind the scenes here pulling the string.
Well, actually, of course, I happen to believe it's a trilateral commission. There are only 87 members in the United States, and it can't be simply coincidence that 11 of those 87 just happen to be in every key position in his administration. And, of course, the Secretary of State, Hillary's husband, was a member of the trilateral commission, and this represents the financial elite of the United States. And it may not be very popular to talk about it, but Barry Goldwater said this organization was created to seize the political government of the United States, and I think they've done a pretty good job.
Well, I think the unfortunate part, I understand, is the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations and Foreign Affairs and the Bilderbergers have all exerted a major influence on the administrations going back to Jimmy Carter.
Absolutely.
And so what I'm trying to point out to people is that the globalism that we're seeing, and that Obama is just a reflection of, has gone on now for more than three decades, and in presidencies stretching back to Carter. And, I've wrote another article looking at the federal debt deficits. Once a year, the Treasury reports the deficit on a GAAP basis, as the generally accepted accounting practices, which are the more strict accounting rules. And when you apply those methods, instead of the normal way the budget is reported, which is on the on a cash basis, and you'll see that, President Bush said he had a $455 billion deficit, the federal budget in 2008. Well, that was on a cash basis. But when you look at that same deficit on a GAAP basis, and what GAAP does, for instance, it demands that you take into consideration today, and you book as current debt, the future obligations you're creating on Social Security or welfare or other government entitlement programs that have to be paid out in the future. When you take that into account, the deficit, the real deficit in 2008 was not $455 billion, but it was $5.1 trillion with a T.
And hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment as we bring our other stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Jerome Corsi, and he, of course, is a regular writer for World Affairs, World Net Daily, and has done a tremendous job. He writes regular articles. We're talking about what the real federal deficit was this last year. Now, the media will tell you, and the Bush administration will tell you, and the pundits will tell you, oh my goodness, it was about $450 billion. But the truth is, apparently once a year they have to tell the truth. Only once a year. They can lie the rest of the time. What was it, $5.1
trillion?
If you look upon this as the real debts and all the money that they're supposed to pay out in the future, they should be putting away for Social Security and Medicare. They're not putting it out because they have no intention of paying it in the future. I think they're going to destroy our economy, and then we can just simply write it off and start it all over again. Of course, in the process, we'll impoverish the American people. But they have to lie to them, and they're lying about what the deficit is. The deficit, they don't even include the war. They don't include Medicare and Social Security, all the money they're stealing from them. massive deficits, and nobody's telling the American people. I mean, this year they're talking $2 trillion. I hate to think what it's really going to be.
Well, and that said, what I also pointed out in this article in World Net Daily was that when you take into account the obligations, the total obligations of the federal government, they're now running at $65.5 trillion. That's a negative $65.5 trillion.
And, of course, as you point out, that's the gross domestic product of the entire world.
Right. The entire world's gross domestic product is now, you know, we're exceeding that in our total federal obligations. And that does not take into account the TARP program, this Troubled Asset Relief Program, which is another $700 billion, or the something like the federal government is looking at maybe a $2.5 trillion deficit on a cash basis in 2009. You've got to add in the TARP money, the money from the deficit spending of the Obama, economic stimulus plan. Their $2.5 trillion cash deficit will probably translate into an $8 or $9 trillion gap accounting deficit. And it'll mean that the federal government will probably go out and raise this year. I've wrote an article, quoted the Treasury Committee that's responsible for planning how to raise the debt. We're probably going to raise $2.5 trillion worth of deficit spending, of government debt, Treasury securities of various kinds sold, largely to foreigners, to subsidize the economic stimulus plan and to subsidize the normal deficit of the federal government.
But Jerome, the problem with that is that certainly Japan is not having the tremendous excess that they've had before. You know, they were making a lot more money than that they were importing. They were selling a lot more than they're importing, but they're not doing that now. The same is true with China. I mean, their exports have fallen off dramatically. The same is certainly true of the oil-producing companies, which in the past were buying a lot of our debt, but they're way down because the price of oil is falling. What happens if these countries do not actually finance a massive deficit? We've been spending about $2.5 billion a day, but it looks like we're going to have to go up to $4 or $5 billion a day, you know, to try to finance this deficit. And what happens if these other countries can't finance it? Then what happens? Nobody ever asked where this $787 billion that they just passed last Friday is going to come from. And now they're talking about another couple of $1 trillion to refinance the banks. Where's the money going to come from?
Well, Dr. Stan, this is the problem, is that at some point or other, the federal government just can't continue to go and raise debt, that where there's a limit to this. The projections are for 2009 that we'll have to go and raise another $4 trillion. And what I'm pointing out in the World Net Daily articles, and take a look at the Red Alert newsletters that I'm writing about this every week now, redalert.wnd.com. I mean, I'm writing 5 or 6 features a week, and my main theme has been that we are bankrupting the United States, that there's going to be a point where the foreign governments just say no more. China said already they don't have much choice. They've got to buy Treasury securities because they have to keep afloat the United States and our debt. We're running deficit spending. We're not paying for the social welfare programs, but this is a formula for disaster. It's a formula for hyperinflation and economic stagnation, like we experienced in the 1970s under Jimmy Carter. I think the administration of President Obama is going to turn out to be a Jimmy Carter administration number two.
But I think it's going to be a lot worse than anything Jimmy Carter ever did.
Well, it likely will be, but if you recall how bad Jimmy Carter was, we ended up with, unemployment there that was 7%. We've already got that. We've got 7.5% unemployment. We're headed to double-digit unemployment very quickly here. Carter never had the bank failures. I think we've got massive bank failures. I think the negative assets the banks are holding has got to be measured in the trillions of dollars. Maybe $6 to $9 trillion of bad assets, and that's way beyond. I mean, if you take a look at a $700 billion Troubled Asset Relief Program, the TARP program, to bail banks out. That's like fighting this problem. You know, if it is $6 to $10 trillion in bad assets, it's like fighting a fire in a skyscraper with a pail and a garden hose. It just won't work. So we're headed for a meltdown of the financial system, which is only in the early stages. Even though we've lost Bear Stearns, it's bankrupt. Lehman Brothers is bankrupt. I think the truth is that two-thirds of the banks, if not more, are bankrupt. And banks like Citibank are just being kept in business because the Obama administration says they're too big to fail. Well, I don't think they're too big to fail. I think they should be allowed to go bankrupt. That'd be a much better solution to these troubled assets than ending up with one form or another of putting them onto the taxpayer. And the end result is going to be that the banks are going to end up being nationalized because, in effect, they're already nationalized. And you could see indications of that when the Obama administration comes out and says, well, you know, anybody who takes funds for the government in a bailout, the executives can only make $500,000 a year. Well, that's already a form of government socialization, of nationalization of the banks. And the same with, you know, the big three automakers. I guess they're limited now. Senator Dodd put this provision in the economic stimulus plan where any corporation that takes these government bailouts is going to be have their executives limited in their compensation. So we're headed towards a socialized national system of government management of banks and major corporations that can't make it in a global environment.
But you know the thing that really bothers me about the whole discussion is they focus our attention on the junkets. Wells Fargo was going to have a four-day junket in Las Vegas. And, oh, my goodness, these bonuses, massive bonuses. But I think the real issue is, look, I mean, there were obviously fraud when they put out these mortgage bonds, these so-called collateralized debt obligations that they knew were going to fail. They actually got AAA ratings on them, and somebody's responsible for giving AAA ratings to totally fraudulent bonds. Then they wrote derivatives contracts that didn't have any money behind them. And I think the people that did that should be forced to take them back. And certainly some of our major banks would go down, and they deserve to go down. Why should we subsidize the banks that created this problem? And that would be specifically Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs and probably all of the Bank of America. They all were involved in this scam. Why should we, you know, they probably have money salted away all over the world, and I think that the people who got the bonuses ought to give them back, and I think that they ought to go to prison for fraudulent activity. I think we're just focusing our attention on all the wrong issues.
Well, you know, Dan, the key issue to me is that the banks and other corporations remain in private enterprise control. I mean, I agree with you that some of these are wrong issues. I mean, I watch President Obama claimed that, you know, the banks are paying themselves too much, or the bonuses on Wall Street are offensive to him. And then I watch him go to dinner with his wife in Chicago with an army of Secret Service, disrupting all the people in the restaurant, and an army of paparazzi that want to photograph him. And then to sign the bill, he's got to fly out with Air Force One to Denver. You know, another army of Secret Service, another army of publicity. Why doesn't President Obama stay in the White House and sign the bill in a low-key fashion if he's worried about spending money? But no, it's okay for the president to spend money. And the president of the United States is on a deficit budget every bit as much as, you know, the banks that are bailed out or General Motors or any of the others.
In fact, I have to smile. Yeah, I'm sure you know about Nancy Pelosi, who flies out here to California every week, and she has a special plane. You know, it's not even just a small plane. It's a great big plane, you know, and she's the only passenger on it, or maybe her staffer are there with her. And, you know, the round trip on this costs probably $100,000 in fuel for Nancy Pelosi, so she doesn't have to go in a regular airplane.
Well, that's all the limousine liberals.
Right.
All the Al Gore environmentalists.
But they're the ones who are so concerned about the bank managers who fly in their private jets, and I think that's wrong. But I also think it's wrong when Nancy Pelosi flies in a private jet when I'm paying for it.
Well, I'd much be happier to have the private enterprise run and let them operate however they want to operate. And the problem is that if we're going to have a creeping socialism here, or nationalization of banks, government control of these businesses is inevitable.
But, of course, the thing is, the government can't even keep its own books and keep them honestly. We've lost $120 billion that was supposed to be used to rebuild Iraq. Nobody knows where it's gone. The Defense Department's lost a couple of $1 trillion. It has no idea where it's gone. The federal government can't even keep a budget on its own. And if you read their reports, every year they've got an excuse where they don't know why they don't know where billions of dollars have gone. And now we want to turn our banks over to them? What madness is that? We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Jerome Corsi. Well, you go right ahead and pick up the story.
Well, I said, what we're saying is that these deficits that are being run, and I'm showing here now that the Treasury is going to go raise $2.5 trillion in debt for 2009 and $4 trillion for 2010. And, you know, the point I've been making in I want to go back to the late, great USA, the book that I wrote on the coming merger with Mexico and Canada. The globalist agenda here is alive and well. And I wrote it, that book, by the way, is now out in paperback, and it's about half the price, and I wrote a new epilogue. It's only available in the paperback. And what I'm arguing is that a key strategy for the globalists is to continue the stealth methodology. In other words, when we bring the light of day, as we have done, we slow down projects like the Trans-Texas Corridor. Governor Perry came out recently and he said the Trans-Texas Corridor is dead. We're not going to have a Trans-Texas Corridor project. But yet when he was questioned, he was asked, well, are we going to build, you know, the Trans-Texas Corridor 35, the parallel highway to Interstate 35, because the contract's already been signed with Cintra in Spain to build that highway, and Cintra's going to run the toll road for some 50 years after it's built. Well, Governor Perry says, oh, yes, we'll build that. So, you know, the stealth methodology, changing names, even changing administrations. So Barack Obama comes in, it's hope and change. In the first couple of weeks, President Obama says, well, this is going to be hard. He gives an inaugural address that largely appears to have been copied out of Franklin Roosevelt's first inaugural address, you know, in the depths of the Depression. An address about responsibility. Where's the hope and change? We have President Obama coming on and saying, well, you know, we can't solve this problem immediately. I thought candidate Obama was running on that, you know, yes, we can. He's telling us now, no, we can't. So the lies, the lack of transparency, what you finally realize is that, you know, President Obama is just the next globalist puppet put in the White House to serve the globalist agenda.
You're absolutely right.
And he's not going to do anything different. Today it's announced that President Obama is now going to send another 15,000 troops to Afghanistan. Well, I thought candidate Obama ran on an anti-war platform, that he was going to, you know, pull out of Iraq. He was not going to expand Afghanistan. Then he started to say, no, Iraq was the wrong war. We needed to be in Afghanistan because that's where Osama bin Laden is. And now the Taliban has made agreements with Pakistan so that Sharia law, Islamic law, is going to get applied in Pakistan, and the Taliban is going to be allowed to operate with impunity up in Pakistan's western region. Now, Obama is going to then send troops to Afghanistan. Well, does this mean that Afghanistan is now President Obama's war? I mean, you know, this is where the American public is not expected to be intelligent enough to remember what campaign Obama said. They're supposed to just cheerlead President Obama. You know, he's like a football team. He's their football team, so anything he does, even in a losing season, the fans are going to still say, oh, he's the Messiah, we'll follow Obama. But the truth is, President Obama is reversing almost everything that campaign Obama ran on, and the press are not pointing it out or holding him accountable.
You're absolutely right. Hang on to that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Jerome Corsi. And Dr. Corsi has simply been saying that candidate Obama promised to get us out of Iraq, pull our troops out of Iraq, and certainly not to expand the war in Afghanistan. Now he wants to expand the war in Afghanistan. There's not one person in 1,000 who can tell me why we're fighting in Afghanistan. I mean, we went there because Osama bin Laden supposedly attacked the World Trade Center. We were going to catch him. And when he got away into Pakistan, we absolutely refused to try to go in and get him. But so why are we still fighting in Afghanistan? We've been there almost over 8 years. And now we're going to expand the war, and now they've finally come up with a wonderful idea. Why don't we try to train Afghan troops? And maybe the Afghan troops can do in Afghanistan what the Iraqi troops did in Iraq. And then, of course, maybe sometime 5, 10, 20, 50 years from now, we can pull our troops out. Why are we over there antagonizing the entire Muslim world? Unless, of course, we want to get them to hate us so we can have a war. And then, of course, Of course, he's just pointing out that, so the Barack Obama keeps talking about, you know, how we've got to be, you know, expect that it's going to take years before we get out of this problem. It's going to take trillions of dollars more. Things are going to get a lot worse, and that's the one thing I will agree with, Jerome. I think things are going to get a lot worse. He's telling us, he's setting us up for that. Things are going to get a lot worse. Go right ahead.
Well, and I'm reporting today to Ramos and Compion were finally let out of prison. They finally got their sentences commuted by President Bush in his last day in office. And today they were released. Their terms will be commuted on March 20th, but they're going to serve the remainder of the 30-some days in their homes. And this, I think, is a major issue, because again, as I wrote in the late great USA, we've still got a wide open border. And Ramos and Compion, I interviewed today Congressman Ted Poe. And Congressman Poe, who is a former judge and prosecutor in Texas, made it clear that, you know, there should be an investigation here into Johnny Sutton, the prosecutor, and into whether or not the Mexican government, which has now admitted their involvement in the case, we ought to investigate whether the Mexican government demanded the prosecution of these Border Patrol agents. Because this case has been a travesty from the beginning. Ramos and Compion were sentenced to serve 11 and 12 years in prison under a misapplication of a federal law, this USC section 924C, which really requires that someone who is a federal felon committing a crime with a weapon has a 10-year mandatory minimum sentence added on to their prison term for the felony they committed. But it was never meant to apply to law enforcement agents. Now, also at the trial, it was clear that this Eldrete Davila had committed it, the drug smuggler who brought across the 750 pounds of the original offense when Ramos and Compion shot after them. He was fleeing. He was fighting with one of the agents. They didn't know they shot him that day. And yet, Eldrete Davila committed a second offense while Johnny Sutton, the Border Patrol agent, had given him immunity, and he had a Border Pass card in his, you know, from the Department of Homeland Security. And yet, you have Eldrete Davila committing a second offense, and the jury is not permitted to know this because Johnny Sutton refuses to allow the jury to be told the truth that Eldrete Davila actually committed a second offense while he was, you know, given immunity.
But one of the things that really bothered me about this was that we were told that, you know, the Border Patrol agents tried to cover up the shooting. And my understanding is, and I'm sure you know this better than I do, that they actually called their superiors. The superiors knew exactly what had happened. They weren't trying to cover it up at all, were they?
Well, I reported on WorldNet Daily, and I got a hold of the Department of Homeland Security investigative report. There were several agents, there were as many as 13 agents on the field that day at the scene, including supervisors. And when the shells were picked up, several of the agents helped pick up the shells. You know, they're picking them up off the desert floor. It doesn't mean that they were trying to hide evidence. The superiors were on the scene. The superiors should have known there was shooting. The superiors didn't require any any forms to be filed or reports to be made. I think if there was responsibility, it was the responsibility of the superiors to investigate the issue at the time.
And, of course, nobody thought it was anything at all. Here was a man that they thought had a gun. I mean, he said he didn't have a gun. How do we know he didn't have a gun? I mean, is a drug smuggler going to tell the truth, especially when he's getting, you know, off scot-free on a number of drug charges? He's being bribed by the government. And this was all basically to demoralize the border control agents. And they basically accomplished that fairly well, and they sent two innocent men to prison. And they would have left them there. Well, the only good thing I can think George Bush ever did was to let them out, but only at the last minute. Well, Jerry, go right ahead.
Well, I think, you understand, this whole issue of the border security is what I want to pick up on a bit more, especially now that Ramos and Campion are finally freed. The issue of the border war is getting out of control. We have now, I wrote a World Net Daily, that we have plans to send the U.S. military, Department of Homeland Security has confirmed it, that the U.S. NORTHCOM has plans to send the U.S. military to the border in the drug war with Mexico. Now, if we've got to send the military to the border, that's a whole escalation of the border war, which most Americans know nothing about. And we've also have this Merida initiative, which is something like $1.4 billion to Mexico's military to beef up Mexico's military to fight the drug war as well. Now, if the drug war is so out of control that the militaries of the two countries have to be involved, you got to go back and ask, why is the border still wide open? And it's clear that Mexico is becoming a drug cartel-controlled country. I also reported in World Net Daily that the Joint Forces Command, which is a top military command at the level of Joint Chiefs, reported in their situation assessment for the coming year that the two countries most at risk of going into political instability are Pakistan and Mexico. And it's clear to me that with the drug war, and Pakistan is with the Taliban, I mean, we see that now. The Taliban's made an agreement with Pakistan to have Sharia law applied in Pakistan and to have the Taliban basically control this mountainous northwest section of Pakistan where the Taliban have been operating with impunity. Now, when you take a look at a drug war, and the Mexican military has been cooperating with the Mexican drug lords, that's been part of the problem, is that how can you envision keeping a border wide open? And yet, when President Obama puts a section in this economic stimulus plan that says, buy American, immediately Canada objects, because Canada is exporting steel, and the European Union objects. And President Obama immediately backs down, and he puts in the provision to say, we'll buy American as long as it's in accordance with our established trade agreements. Well, that means you're not going to buy American at all. And so even President Obama now, who again campaigned on renegotiating NAFTA, on protecting U.S. workers,
Hold that thought, we're going to be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Jerome of Dr. Corsi's made several very important points. Number one is the fact that the whole structure of Mexico is breaking down. There's the talk about anarchy, the collapse of the government down there. The two countries in the world most probably are going to go into total anarchy, Pakistan. Of course, that will affect the United States because our troops are over in Afghanistan, and it will just facilitate the Taliban attacks on the United States forces over there and kill a lot more boys. And then, of course, the breakdown of law and order in Mexico. Now, we should have had a fence a long time ago. They've consistently refused to fight to build a fence. They've left it wide open so all those terrible terrorists who want to come in here and destroy us could come in. Question is, if really we've got this terrible terrorist movement in the world that requires us all to have to take off our shoes when we get into an airplane because, you know, we want to protect us from terrorists Why have they never tried to complete the fence down there? Now, well, they're putting in a virtual fence, and what virtual fence means that they got a couple of towers up there and some electronic sensors, and when people got across the border, then they let the Border Patrol know. Well, the one thing that, of course, they do not want is an offensive will be effective. And now, of course, if the government of Mexico, if the society down there collapses, we're going to have millions of people streaming back in here to get away from the chaos and of anarchy in Mexico. So I share your concern on that, and I think it's such an important issue people don't understand. And the public is not being told here in America because of the degree of control of the media. So pick the story up, Jerry.
Well, I think we're, you know, the Robles and Campion story is not going to be finished because the issues here are, Robles and Campion deserve a full pardon. They're still going to be felons. They're still going to have to go into basically supervision for 3 more years in their parole. They're going to be felons for the rest of their lives. And all they did was try to maintain our, you know, drug laws at the borders. When you've got a drug war raging on the border, Robles and Campion ought to be heroes. Because they were, you know, of the few since Robles and Campion have been in prison, you've had a chilling effect across the Border Patrol, law enforcement, all across the southern border. Every time a law enforcement officer thinks about, you know, using their weapon or deadly force against a Mexican, even a Mexican drug smuggler, it has to flash through their mind that they're facing the same situation Robles and Campion did, which is that they could end up being prosecuted as a law enforcement agent trying to do their job. So we have allowed Mexico to insist that Robles and Campion be prosecuted. We've done that. We've prosecuted Robles and Campion. And in fact, we've chilled out the Border Patrol. But yet now we're saying we're going to have to send the military to the border. This is a problem that could have been solved, except that going back to President Bush, you know, in the first administration, had a love affair with Mexico and the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which I've done everything I can possibly to expose. And the late great USA, you know, in this paperback, in this epilogue, I point out we've slowed the agenda down just by exposing it, by making millions of Americans aware that there was an integration effort in North America to create a North American Union. But Dr. Sand, don't think that effort's over. We're in the middle of this contrived economic crisis, which is going to be a massive economic crisis. It's going to be deeper than anyone has any concept of at this point. And an Obama stimulus package was not intended to solve the problem. It was just intended to create a massive welfare state on the European model.
And like, I really
we're going to spend 40% of our gross domestic product increasingly on welfare.
And I think what people have to understand, they really don't want to stop the problem, but they want to give the American people the idea that they're trying to stop the problem, and they're just bumbling idiots. And they're not bumbling idiots. They know exactly what they're doing, but you've got to convince the American people who are doing everything we can to help them and to stop the collapse of the housing market. And we're not trying to stop the collapse of the housing market. They've known for 5 months that what they should do. They got, you know, on October 3rd, almost 5 months ago, 4.5 months ago, they got $700 billion, and they absolutely refuse to do what's logical. And people have to say, why? And the very obvious question is, because their loyalty is not to America. They want to destroy our economy and then merge us into a world government. At least that's my take on it. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, I think that's said you're right. I mean, this is the issue that, when Americans get to a crisis point, it's like Rahm Emanuel said, you know, he doesn't want to let the current chief of staff for President Obama, don't let any good crisis go to waste. That, you know, by the time Americans are facing losing their homes, losing their jobs, credit that they cannot pay, credit cards and other forms of debt, Americans will accept any solution. And the solution that's rolled out is, look, we have to create a new currency because the dollar is so hyperinflated or so devalued that we need a European Union-style Amero. And, you know, Dr. Sand, I didn't make up the Amero. The Amero I reported on. It was created by Herbert Grubel of the Fraser Institute, an economist in Canada, who created the idea that we should have an Amero. And then Robert Pastor, who is a professor at American University, he wrote a book on, you know, the whole, looking at the European Union and how it was created, how that model could be applied in North America. And Robert Pastor endorsed the idea of the Amero and said we should create a North American central bank. So all of these globalists have been out front with these ideas, but it's taken things like the late great USA, where I got a hold of the meeting in Banff, Canada, of this North American Forum for Integration, all the attendees, and the usual list of suspects there, George Shultz from, you know, the Reagan administration, and a whole set of globalists that show up at all these meetings. You compare that list of attendees with the Bilderbergers or with the Council on Foreign Relations or the Davos World Forum. It's the same cast of characters showing up, sponsored by world economists who want there to be a one-world economy, and by the left, because the left equally sees, you know, a world socialism on the European model triumphing even in America. So from both sides, this globalism is a push against the United States of America remaining a sovereign nation. And the crisis that we're in, this economic crisis, is only going to be used to put more pressure on people to, you know, accept more globalism as a solution to a devalued currency, to loss of jobs, and massive home foreclosures.
I think you're absolutely right, and I just hope our listeners understand that the reason, of course, that they do not want Buy America, they don't want to protect our jobs, is because they don't want to protect our jobs. We actually allow our corporations to go overseas, and then we reward them with not having to pay any income tax. Isn't that wonderful? I wish I could go overseas and not pay income tax. I can't, but our corporations can, and then they can ship their products back in here, and, of course, to undercut anybody who's producing here in the United States, because they don't have to provide pensions or health care or anything for the slave laborers overseas, over in communist China, living in a ruthless, tyrannical government and regime that we are financing and subsidized, and we have since its inception. Of course, now we're totally dependent upon them to recycle the money that we send them back so we can pay our bills here. We have to suddenly get at least $2 billion, $2.5 billion every day from China and Japan. But, of course, when that money cuts off, of course, by later this year, it's going to be $4 or $5 billion a day they're going to have to get. So basically, Jerome, how are we going to get the American people to understand that our leaders really have no loyalty to America? Their loyalty is not to America, but to this globalist dream, and their real function and objective is to build up the economy in other nations and destroy the manufacturing base of our own country.
Well, I said, I think Americans are going to come to a point where jobs are lost, where homes are lost, and they're looking in the White House. They thought they elected President Obama for hope and change, and all they're getting is responsibility in hard times. And the rhetoric and the smile that Obama used to, you know, win the office of presidency is not going to sustain him. Now, the problem is that Americans can turn on President Obama. They will put Republicans in there. The Republicans will do just the same thing. We saw that with President Bush. I see now that Senators Lindsey Graham and John McCain are supporting the idea that was advanced by George Soros at the World Economic Forum in Davos, which is the Swedish plan. The Swedish plan is to nationalize the banks. And President Obama and John McCain are going to agree, so that no matter which of them were with the White House, they were both going to nationalize the banks. Now that's, again, another move toward a world government structure, because by the time the banks are nationalized worldwide, the governments in control of the banks will have a much easier time moving it into a regional and world structure, because that's ultimately what the bankers have wanted from the beginning. And with the bankers and the government united, you know, the Federal Reserve is a private bank. It's a group of private bankers that are manipulating much of this crisis. And if the private bankers and the federal bank remain private, but yet end up with the government nationalizing all the other banks, including Citibank and Bank of America and any other bank that's accepted a government bailout, now we're moving towards a model which is no longer a private enterprise model at all. It's a banker-dominated, government-nationalized of business and banking model, which, you know, is some strange form of socialism combined with fascism. as both sides of the political spectrum are after a globalist pursuit.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think people have to understand that this whole, in my estimation, this whole financial collapse is certainly staged, and all you have to do is ask yourself, why haven't they done anything to stop the cascade of home foreclosures? 10,000 Americans every single day get a notice for home foreclosure. I mean, over a million people were forced out of their homes last year, but 10,000 a day, even after they've known this, they've had the money. Henry Paulson couldn't even give away the full $700 billion that he had. Why didn't he spend it to, you know, try to stop the home foreclosures? Oh, well, my goodness, you know, how would we know how much to pay for the homes? We might pay too much. We might pay too little. We're just so incompetent. We have no idea what to do. So we're not going to do anything, and 10,000 people every day get a notice their home is going to be foreclosed on, and it goes on and on and on, and that's exactly what they want, but they don't want the American people to know any more than they want them to know that the so-called stimulus bill was not a stimulus bill. It was to give you the impression that they're doing something when they're really not. Go right ahead.
Well, I said, I mean, by the time we're finished spending and borrowing these trillions of dollars, we could have borrowed the $12 trillion and just paid everybody's mortgages off. Instead of, you know, spending all the money we're going to spend to bail out General Motors, why doesn't the government just buy every American family a car?
Right.
I mean, but those are not the solutions that are being thought about or contemplated. Solutions are more social welfare, more government control, more nationalization, and more globalization. And then you've got, you know, Representative Elsie Hastings in Florida, who is an impeached federal judge, introducing a resolution, House Resolution 645, to create no fewer than 6 detention centers on U.S. military installations. I called Hastings' office and said, what do you need detention centers for? And he said, well, another Katrina. I mean, well, as I pointed out, in Katrina, we needed relief centers. There wasn't a need to detain very many people. There might have been some people who didn't want to evacuate when the order was given, but that was very few. To have detention centers on military facilities suggests that the government's concerned that the economic crisis might lead to European-style rioting in the streets, and that, you know, it makes me think about massive detentions of civilians.
And I think that's exactly what they intend. They know very well that there's going to be massive unrest in America and with so many people out of work and really with a sense of hopelessness, and they're doing everything they can to promote it. And
that's not a question anymore of Republican versus Democrat.
Right.
The Bush administration was on the same agenda. The Obama administration now is not reversing policy or doing anything fundamentally different. The, you know, Obama administration is going to carry out the expansion of the war in Afghanistan, when Obama, as candidate, campaigned on the idea that he was going to pull out of Iraq and pull out of, you know, the war was a bad idea, and he was an anti-war candidate. And the left supported candidate Obama on that premise. Once he's in the White House, the order comes 15,000 more troops. It reminded me today of when, you know, Richard Nixon came into the White House with a plan to end the Vietnam War. His plan to end the Vietnam War was to expand it.
And then he kept those boys there for 4 more years so he could get reelected, and it was all unnecessary. But he didn't want to end the war because he wanted to have something to run on in 1972. And how many thousands of American boys died and how many are permanently crippled because Richard Nixon intentionally prolonged that war? It could have ended in 1968. We never should have been there in the first place.
Well, the war was not ended, as you know, Dr. Sandman, after Richard Nixon resigned from office.
Right.
And you've got the same issue here with, you know, President Obama. You can take the campaign rhetoric, campaign promises, you know, transparency, all these bills are going to be posted on the government website. You're going to be able to study them. There won't be any earmarks. What do we get? Even Nancy Pelosi has a provision in here for millions of dollars for some kind of a preserve in San Francisco that has these little mice is its habitat that she's particularly fond of. You know, that's her pet project. And you still have, you know, millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, of those kinds of projects, whether they're earmarked or not. They're designed for a specific congressman or senator as a payoff. You've still got no posting of that bill. In fact, Obama rushed it through the House and the Senate. There was no opportunity even to read it, let alone transparency of posting it on a government website for the public to study before it was voted on. And that campaign lie is forgotten, and the press is supposed to forget it when President Obama is in office, because President Obama says, well, if you're not bipartisan, we're not in a new era of politics. Well, a new era of politics, I guess, is where everybody agrees with President Obama regardless of what he does.
Well, you know, there's a website called stimuluswatch.org or com, I'm not sure, but stimuluswatch, you can go there. Here in California, we're going to get 1,900 pork projects. In Florida, they're going to get 1,700. I noticed that New Hampshire didn't get any pork projects. Maybe it's because they object to what's going on in Washington, D.C.
Well, it could be, but, you know, California is already $45 billion in deficit, and California is facing layoffs. I think there's something like 48 of the states now are facing budget deficits. And this bill may have, as best I can figure, maybe as much as $300 billion for the states to keep them going.
Oh, no, but they have...
What's going to happen when that money is spent? Where are they going to need another $300 billion? Federal deficit spending to keep the states going?
Not only that, but of course the federal government's going to give everybody a check, $800. If you're on Social Security, another $250. But here in California, they're going to raise the taxes and take away the money the federal government's giving us. The federal government's going to give us money so we can spend it and get the economy going. The state government's going to take the money away so they can pay their bills and so they can spend more. There's something wrong with the picture.
Right.
Our guest is, of course, Dr. Jerome Corsi. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program, and you hang on there, Jerome. We'll be right back. Do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out?
Well, like I said, I think a couple things. I'm writing on WorldNet Daily, and then I'd like the listeners to take a look at this redalert.wnd.com. It's the weekly economic newsletter I'm writing. And that newsletter is also going to very quickly have practical economic advice, financial planning advice contained in it. We're making it. I spent 25 years in financial services, and I still have all my securities licenses and my insurance licenses. I help banks around the world create financial planning divisions where they could sell annuities and mutual funds to their customers and do retirement planning and other types of financial planning. And also, the late great USA has just come out in paperback. You take a look at it on Amazon.com. It's in the bookstores. It's about half the original price, and it's got a new epilogue updating the book that is only available, the epilogue, in the paperback version.
All right, fine. Well, you've got about a minute in here, actually 2 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of subjects, Dr. Stan, but I think the main theme I want the listeners aware of is that the Obama presidency is not promising so far anything new. Maybe the leftist version, the socialist version of globalism, but still globalism just the same. And the economic crisis that I think was engineered, I think Greenspan with lowering the rates in 2003 and 2004 to 1% knew he was creating another bubble. This housing subprime bubble was foreseeable in 2006 for sure. 20% of the mortgages being written were subprime, but all you had to do to get a mortgage in 2006 was have a pulse. And the entire bubble bursting has caused a worldwide crisis, which is going to throw us into a huge economic downturn that the left and the right have wanted to exploit for pushing more globalism. So I think what listeners need to watch is that over the next few months, we're going to see more and more of a push for North American Union again, for new currency, the Amero, for global solutions to the economic problems. Wait until the papers begin talking. They already have about Europe collapsing economically, and not only Western Europe, but Eastern Europe, and Russia collapsing, and China struggling. Well, this is global. It'll be a push for global solutions.
Well, you know, actually, I was reading something this morning that apparently, you know, Eastern Europe is collapsing financially. The banks in Europe and Russia and even Western Europe and even Great Britain are really having real problems. We're out of time. God bless. We'll talk to you later. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope you've enjoyed our conversation. Jerome, are you still there?
Yes, I'm right here, Dr.
I just wanted to thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to getting you on to some of our other programs real soon.
Always a great honor and pleasure to be with you. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, I do hope you enjoy Dr. Corsi. He's certainly one of the best informed people out there, and certainly he's absolutely right. We are facing the worst financial crisis that you've ever seen, probably the worst financial crisis this nation has ever seen, and some of the experts are talking it's been 300 years since we've seen anything like this. And there is no ready solution for it. And we're going to have difficult times no matter what we do, but everything they're doing today is guaranteed to make things worse. And they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. And they're not trying to solve the problem, which is why they have not addressed the housing issue. Why every single day 10,000 people receive a foreclosure notice, and they know exactly what's going on. But that we don't want the foolish people to know. You wouldn't like to understand that this is all engineered. And who's engineering it? Why, of course, the people in the Trilateral Commission. I mean, where do you think Timothy Geithner, the new Secretary of the Treasury, came from? He came from the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, and, of course, the Group of 30, just exactly like Paul Volcker, who's the chief economic advisor to the president. He came from all the same groups, only he is the chairman of the Northern California chapter of the, or Northern American chapter of the Trilateral Commission, and he's the chairman of the Group of 30. And there's only 30 people, and here you've got the head of the Bank of China there, and they're all into this thing together. They just don't want this common folks to understand. Larry Summers, who heads the Council of Economic Advisors, well, he's not Trilateral Commission, but he belongs to all the others. There's a little clique that runs our country. We have an invisible government. We have a visible government, which you see. We have an invisible government, which you don't see. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to read my newsletters. You need to read a new book we're carrying. It was written in 1935 in the heart of the Depression by Gertrude Coogan, forward by Senator Owen, who is actually one of the founders of the Federal Reserve System, who turned against it when he realized it was a scam and it was designed to enrich the wealthy and impoverish the common people. And then, of course, remember my November and December 2008 newsletters. They're posted there. And if you really want to know what it's about, you simply go up on the Internet, you Google in Radio Liberty, that's my newsletter, and then President Woodrow Wilson, and read certainly what he said in his book, The New Freedom, and we'll be putting it in a recent newsletter. We actually talked about how there was this group, and everybody back in 1912 was afraid of it. They knew it was pervasive. It was into everything. People were afraid even to talk about it. Even the biggest men in America were afraid of it. And Chrissy goes on to tell you it's the financial elite that will destroy anyone that gets in their way. And he makes it very, very clear in his book, The New Freedom, which is actually published in 1913. And the same people are today, in those days, was J.P. Morgan and John D. Rockefeller. And today it's J.P. Morgan's Chase Bank, which is a Rockefeller-controlled bank, and Citibank, which is Rockefeller-controlled, and Goldman Sachs. And, of course, they all just happen to belong to the Trilateral Commission. There's only 86 or 87 people there. Do you think that's just coincidence? You need to get our material. You need to get the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. The book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. The book, Fiat Money Inflation in France. You need to get our pamphlets on the history of money and the financial meltdown. You need to get my talk on the financial tsunami, and the syllabus goes with that. And you'll know more than most college professors and economists there. Certainly far more than those who are working for the government, or if they do know, they're concealing it, because the last thing they want to do is do what's right to correct this terrible problem that we have. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get our material on the concentration camps, because they're not imaginary. You'll see the video. You'll see the videos of the congressmen talking about the concentration camps that you're never going to see elsewhere. And so that's the concentration camp special. You'll certainly want to get my talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, because people don't turn back to God. Do you think God is ever going to bless this country again?